The Shift Show, Captain's Log, Episode 13. In today's episode, Dwayne and Joe take you through their top four takeaways from the recent Microsoft Ignite conference. Computer, loop us in.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Hey, I'm having an enjoyable Friday morning here as we're doing this podcast. Trying to recover from a very busy week.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. We've had a lot going on over the last 2 weeks. So
I think we'll talk about that in our win.
Yeah.
A good win this week.
Yeah.
So definitely.
So we had a couple of conferences over the last 2 weeks that we didn't actually, I mean, we did part of one, but mostly we're going to talk about the news that came out of Ignite. We're not normally a news type podcast. We're more of an educational podcast, but I thought we could spin this around a little bit and take some of our top takeaways that came out of Ignite as they relate to teams and modern workplace type stuff, and kind of break them down a little bit for our end user audience to kind of see this is the future maybe. And then let me put a big giant asterisk on that, because Microsoft has this really bad habit of showing something and then like 3 years later, you might see some of it. So, and that's actually going to come up in this episode for one of the things that we picked. So
yeah, the goal is to cover a few items here. I think we got four we're going to talk about that are user, you know, facing, user centric. There's definitely a number of things that IT pro administrator kind of stuff that came out that's going to be helpful, exciting, but we want to talk about the user side. That's kind of our education, this podcast we usually talking about.
So Joe, I'm going to play a game. I'm going to name off the first takeaway that we had, and then you have to give me your initial honest reaction. you cringed. are you ready?
Let's go. Sure, let's
All
go
right.
for it.
So the first one is what is known as Mesh, which is virtual avatars in Teams.
Where's my legs? I, you know, it's one aspect in a virtual world that I could help me change my attitude for the day. I could be wearing some, you know, some nice designer jeans or some slacks or some shorts. But yeah, that interface will be interesting. I think it does better mimic what we are used to seeing people for the, you know, basically the last 2 years, pretty solid, is, you know, shoulders up. You get a little bit more than that. That would be kind of my first, just the first reaction.
That's a lot. we're going to have to refine your reactions as we play this game further. I was thinking more like one word. Well, let's roll this back a second. Mesh was announced during the keynote at Ignite. It was kind of, I didn't see it coming. I hadn't heard anything about it. Had
it was
you
definitely like, on the down low. Now they, yeah, they did really well on keeping that one hushed.
Yeah. So Mesh is the, I don't even know if that's like the code name or their product name or the official name or whatever, but we're just going to say it is a digital identity for you. Like you can create like a video game, like you can create a character that looks like you, and when you jump on a call, and rather than having your webcam on, you can have your digital self be on, which sounds like, I don't know, something out of like a Black Mirror episode or something. But
I want to use the word meshing, you know, in the definition. So it's taking the virtual reality that they've been providing through a product they purchased a couple of years ago, AltSpace VR, that virtual reality, mixed reality kind of concept and the collaboration level type of work you can do in teams, the meetings you can do in teams, and meshing those together.
Okay.
Is where I kind of see what they're calling mesh. Because there's our second item I think we're going to talk about is very similar too. And again, how do these fit together? It almost feels like there's one's a subset or a superset of the other. They definitely work together.
If we were on a call, like, and I want to really break this down to like just an everyday use case. We jump on a call, or you call me, and I answer, and my camera's on, and I'm using air quotes there, and you're just seeing like a 3D Dwayne. Like, are you cool with that? Does that bother you at all?
Well, my typical snarkiness would say that's better than what I have normally from you.
Thanks, man. Face made for radio, right?
I think I'd be accepting of it. I think it probably gives the person on the other end an idea that that person's maybe just clearly not ready to be on the camera right now. There's something too much hectic going on in the background. I know you can change your background and block that out, but maybe that's just not something they need to do today. They're not feeling well. They don't want to show on camera, and I think we will be okay with that. I think hopefully Microsoft has done enough research that that's going to be the case too. It's better than the other extreme, which is simply no camera.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I think it's better than a profile picture. And one thing
profile pictures aren't even the same.
Yeah,
you know,
it's their
person.
Dog.
Yeah, or something. Yeah. Nothing against their dog, but yeah, exactly.
Well, one thing that happened during the keynote when they introduced this was the company that was kind of unveiling it has been using it for a little while, and her digital avatar, like, it wasn't just like this weird robot thing just sitting there hovering. Like, it was actually, its lips were moving, hands were moving, head was turning, gestures and things like that. She even held up her hands and did like the heart thing, and it did it, I assume. Yeah. And we don't know if what we saw was live or like a rendered recording. So that's another theme that I saw from Ignite this year. But the idea would be that it would mimic you. It's your mimic, right? So
it's your avatar, and it does. I think that's what is unique. What they're trying to bring is, You can have an avatar, but often they're static, or they're just, maybe they have slight movements. If you have any Xbox experience, you can go create an avatar.
Remind me on Nintendo.
Yeah. Yep. And put yourself in a hoodie and give yourself a special hat or some gloves. You can change yourself up and make yourself look however you want. I think these avatars obviously give you a number of other nuances to beyond just the way you look, but having that motion, hand motion and things like that is different. And I think that's just something, that's the new part of mesh. That's the new experience we're going to have.
Well, I'm really curious to see the social acceptance of this. Like, how many people would feel more comfortable doing that? And how many people, in thinking more like from like a manager's perspective, how many managers would be willing to accept, like, hey, I never see this employee, and we jump on a call, and I'm still not seeing the employee, and I'm seeing a 3D thing. So I don't have answers for those questions. I'm just thinking out loud about, like, curious to see in 10, not 10 years, but 2 or 3 years, does this play into it?
I think that's an interesting aspect to think about is, working remotely, managers that manage consultants, temporary employees, there's often consultants maybe you never maybe you never see them at all. I mean, I know that we've had work done for our podcast logo, you know, those kind of side jobs. Do you need to see the person even at all? But maybe for some anonymity too, on those kind of processes might be better, instead of actually having a full, you know, digital picture of that person.
Yeah. So, and Microsoft had kind of hinted at this, you know, everybody's heard of meeting fatigue and, you know, I'm on call after call after call. And I think they're kind of attributing some of it to camera fatigue. Like there's this weight of being on camera all the time. Sometimes that people might feel of having to make, am I centered right? Am I looking right? What's in my background? And you were talking about those things earlier. And maybe this is a way to kind of alleviate that a little bit. And one scenario that I think might be kind of interesting is if you're giving us a talk, a presentation, normally everybody turns their cameras off, right? Like, you know, some mm-hmm. etiquette would be that while the presenter is giving their presentation, everybody turns their cameras off. And that's usually so that the recording just shows the person's camera. But then it can make it feel like you're talking to an empty room because you don't actually see anything. And so maybe it'd be kind of interesting to at least have some sense of there's actually people out there that I'm talking to. So that might be an interesting use case for this.
And like you said, the fatigue and the video part of that, that's where they have tried to bring us like together mode. Mm-hmm. So there's a consistent view of everyone, you know, on a call or something like that. So this is definitely another way to maybe to help with that, is that reduced detailed view of each person, but you still get some reference that they're active and participating.
Yeah. So let's move to our next one. So I'm going to do this again, but you're going to do better this time, right? I'm going to give you the next big takeaway, or our next big top takeaway. And that is the metaverse.
Ready Player One.
Okay.
I first thing in that. My mind. Nerd. Is that better? Shorter?
Joe, briefly describe to our audience what the heck is the metaverse.
Well, I'm gonna pull a line. I think that does a good job out of one of the blog posts. It's a digital space inhabited by digital representations of people and things. So, for what we've seen, it's different than what we see with Mesh and Teams, which is more of an avatar coming through your video through Teams. And Metaverse is more of a digital space that you enter, a virtual workspace that you enter, where you're more inclined to feel like you are, you know, in some digital representation of a conference room or a large conference hall or a stadium, but you're actually in a virtual space, not just a bunch of different cameras showing up in your Teams meeting. But I would say Mesh is the first experience we're going to have that's a digital representation of you, and Metaverse is going to be sort of that a location where that digital representation of you can go visit.
Hmm. In the demo, again, the Ignite media stuff that came out when they showed this, they showed like a virtual office building that had like little conference rooms in it. And there were like these little legless people running around, like pointing at whiteboards and moving sticky notes around and sitting around a table. I think there was one where they were even playing ping pong back and forth. And I thought to myself, honestly, my first reaction was, this is ridiculous. But I have an open mind here. I think it's kind of gimmicky. I'm having a hard time imagining how this fits into a actual real world hybrid workplace. Because if we're going hybrid and some people are in person and some people are remote, I don't, can you even do that in this metaverse thing? Because it seems like you got to be playing the game. It looks like a video game. You got to be in it to be a part of it. So this is like not a hybrid thing, which I thought was a big, you know, one of their big, points that they're trying to make about the future of work is hybrid.
So I think one of the things you brought up is how do you, you know, from the demos, one, their demos or maybe the representations of what they think they're going to be able to do if they're not doing it right now, is I think some of those presentations were someone's in, it felt like a classroom, and there's someone moving planner cards on a whiteboard or something like that in a digital virtual space. There's an avatar who's virtually moving cards around on a whiteboard, and there's virtual people in the room watching that. Like how, I mean, what is that person who's doing the work on the whiteboard, what are they doing at their computer to make that happen? Yeah. And it's got to be something that's easy. You know, it's got to be something that brings some, what is the value that's going to bring beyond sharing their computer screen in Planner and moving the cards around and everybody on the call seeing it?
While you were saying it, I was thinking to myself, I would just open up Planner and drag the card from one bucket to the other.
Exactly. So what is it? What is that going to bring us into the metaverse if we do that in that digital space? What is that going to, you know, allow us to do differently? I think you've brought up some stuff. There's spatial sound capabilities in the metaverse.
Yeah, that's an interesting little feature. So we've played around with like Mozilla hubs and stuff like that that kind of do this, where because you're in this 3D space, the sound that comes out of your little digital person is actually like location aware, I guess, like in real life. Like if somebody's behind you and they say something, you can perceive that they're behind you and said something, like where the sound came from, the direction. And so that actually works in this. And so I saw some chatter online that I thought was really kind of intriguing, was if you're in a meeting and you're all little avatar people, I could actually like pull you aside and go to the back of the room and have a conversation with you and then go sit back down at the virtual table. So I thought that was kind of cool. But while I'm saying that to you, I'm thinking to myself like, or I could just send you a Teams chat and, you know, achieve the same thing.
Exactly.
I'm really trying not to be a detractor of this. I think it's interesting. I'm just having a hard time. I feel like you have to really shoehorn this into actually being something that's going to be super duper useful.
Right. Maybe down the road. Yeah. I'm thinking of, we like Star Trek, I think a little bit, don't we? A little bit.
Oh yeah.
So the holodeck, but I'm also thinking of, something like, Jedi Council getting together in Star Wars and a bunch of virtual avatars sitting around a room and, maybe sitting around a conference table and actually digitally sitting around a conference table so that, you know, Sean is on one side and Ken is on the other. And, you know, it would be great if eventually there's like a whisper command where, you know, just that person can hear what you're telling them.
So that would be like the cone of silence or one of the things from Get Smart where they're both wearing a bubble on their head.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Totally. Does that bring some value? Does it make you feel closer, like you're with those folks and you maybe, again, you're working globally, working hybrid? Is that going to help us do better, collaborate better, feel like we are connected again? I think that's just we're going to see, you know, is it about flexibility, helping engagements, and, you know, where does that take off? And how well does it need to be adopted by everybody? And how well does every person use the technology? If you're going to do this, it needs to be easy, and everyone who has to be involved has to be able to do it. So, you know,
I was relieved that it doesn't require a VR headset to function.
I was a little worried
about that at first. And to be honest, like when you were talking about sitting around the conference table, I work from home most of the time, and I just don't know how I feel about what my life would look like if I was just sitting here at my desk all day wearing a VR headset, you know, and unaware of what's going on around me in the real
exactly.
world.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah. That might detract from working from home. And, you know, some of the pleasures of seeing outside and seeing trees and things like that.
Yeah. I also am a little, you know, I don't think this is coming soon. So I think it's going to be a while before we actually see this in the real world. But one thing that I had written down that I was wondering about was the impact that this is going to have on the computing power of the devices that people are using. Is this going to work on an iPhone or an iPad? And I realize I'm asking things that probably nobody knows the answers to yet. Just thinking out loud. You know, if I'm using a laptop, is this thing going to absolutely destroy my processor and make my fan run super fast, you know, like my old Surface Book used to? So, you know, how hard is this going to work out computers just to be able to play ball in this virtual space? Like,
sure.
Yeah, are we going to create this gap where if you don't have a good enough computer, you can't participate in the virtual ping pong meeting that we're going to have, you know, in the metaverse.
Right. So I would say for education, what we're in and K-12, having a virtual classroom like this, you know, Microsoft has started shipping their Surface Laptop SEs,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah. That's a good
are they
point.
Shipping a product that they're trying to compete with, you know, a Chromebook that isn't going to actually support the future that they're trying to shape with respect to possibly, you know, virtual classrooms and things like that.
I think those have a Intel Celeron, which I didn't even know that chip was still in production. So yeah. let me look that up real quick.
Yeah. But the CPU GPU impact is going to be, may or may not be important. We'll see. I know that we sometimes just using SharePoint Spaces, sometimes we try to demo that, and we demo that in a virtual machine, and it has problems.
And oh yeah, yeah. I've done that on accident.
And that's nothing compared to what Mesh and Metaverse are bringing to us.
A lot of our demos that we do when we're talking with customers and stuff is we have a VM that has everything that we want to share in it. And I remember the first time we were like, oh yeah, check out this thing where SharePoint Spaces, and the VM just dies. And yes, I just confirmed the Surface Laptop SE is powered by an Intel Celeron processor and has four gigs of RAM.
Well, at least they remember to put in the L2 cache now, I think. So back when the first Celerons came out, you did not want the first round.
Yeah.
A little different, but I think the other thing that'll be interesting is for content creators is who's going to build and how do you build this immersive environment. You know, how do you, you know, can you just take some AutoCAD drawings? You know, can we take our campus and some of our favorite buildings and somehow they're rendered into this environment? It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
That is not something I thought about. That's interesting. Yeah. Like, okay, in a hybrid environment where you've got a teacher in a classroom, you could have virtual students in the same classroom, but it would be like via. That's really interesting.
Huh. I mean, imagine our second floor hallway where our offices are, just sitting there all day long, and we can still just yell down the hallway.
No, wait a minute. Think about what just happened. I'm sitting at home, working from home. wearing a VR headset in a digital version of my office on campus. No. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. The point of this was
everybody
to tell people.
Everybody could have a window, though. Everybody could have a window.
Yeah. The point of this was to tell people that this is coming, you know, quote unquote soon, and kind of the ideas and the direction that Microsoft was headed with, number one, not having to be on camera all the time and having this virtual avatar that mimics you, and then expanding on that, being able to take that virtual avatar and drop it into like a Minecraft-esque type world where you can walk around and interact with people who are also in this little virtual world. And so I think it's, you know, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I'm really curious to see how long it takes to actually pull this off. Mm-hmm. How long is it going to be before we see this? And so I'm going to use that as a segue into the next thing, our next takeaway. Joe, you and I can't remember. So back when you used to be able to go to Ignite in person, before the world, you know, turning into what it is, we would go to Orlando. It would be you, me, 35,000 other nerds, and we would all, you know, hear what Microsoft was coming out with. Well, they came out with this thing, or they demoed this technology called the Fluid Framework. And so I'm going to ask you again, first reaction, when you think, what was your reaction back at Ignite? I think it was 2018. Maybe? I can't remember which one it was. When you saw them demo the Fluid Framework for the first time, what was your thought?
Boy, that's a couple of years ago. That first thought was, how and where are people going to enable the ability to edit these little pieces of documents and not like lose track of them, I guess? Like, where do they end up? Like, how does it all not just get lost? My first reaction was just, they are fluid. So fluid moves, fluid flows. How are people going to be able to kind of keep track of what it is that they just created and where did they do it at?
Okay. So I'm going to give some context for our listeners to that, because I realized that we didn't even explain what it is before I asked him his reaction. Microsoft unveiled this new app called Loop. Loop is this collaborative canvas that you can work on stuff really quickly with your peers. Kind of like a OneNote on steroids. But it's really based on this older technology that Microsoft kind of showed off several years ago called Fluid. And Fluid was the ability to inject live documents directly into like a chat in Teams. And so I think that's kind of where you were headed with like, how do I keep track of that?
Because I think the key word there was the word documents, and there was not even,
it's not even a document.
Document. Yeah.
It's a part of a document.
It's a paragraph. It's a bullet list.
Yeah. Table.
It's table list. It's chunks of content that you're working on, and they get embedded and used everywhere, and they can be reused in different places. It was, I remember the video was really, it was a pretty sweet video, their presentation of it, but it's been how many years now? We're gonna finally get the chance to work with it.
Yeah, so this is actually one of those things that we can say is coming soon, because I believe right now in Teams, the Fluid components, I believe is what it's referred to right now, and I think it's going to later be renamed to Loop components.
Live components, I think.
Live components. I think
it's live components, yeah.
I don't even know.
Yeah, like I said, the docs out there still have some old names to work on. So.
Yeah. So you're going to be able to, and I think this is neat. My first reaction at Ignite was, when I saw that, I wasn't super happy. I was like, that's cool. But if I was having enough of a struggle trying to coach our users on the ability to do co-authoring in Office. Now, if I turn around and tell them, hey, you can inject a part of a document into a chat, and yes, it was a chat message, but everybody can work in it at the same time, I just didn't feel super intuitive, and I felt like it was going to melt a lot of brains if we tried to deliver that. So I'm glad that it hadn't come out for a while because it's had more time to get refined. But they're still doing that exact same thing. So you're going to be able to go into a Teams chat, and if you and I were working on a list of something and we don't want to totally switch context and go create a Microsoft list and bring it into our chat as a tab and then start working on it together, I could just, in the stream of communication, inject a list into our chat, and then immediately you and I can both start formulating, you know, ideas and ranking them in order. I think that's cool. I think that was and is a neat way to demo this technology and make it useful. My only question is, kind of like you were alluding to earlier, once you're done with it, where does it go? Like, how do I turn it into, because ultimately it's going to need to be a Word doc or a PDF or a PowerPoint or some sort of actual content. But the beginning stages of the creation of that content are now not happening in office. They're happening midstream in a chat.
I think exactly is the concept around this is the initial way to generate some content very quickly, easily. How do you take that and put it to where you need it later? Because you're, like you said, it likely isn't the final resting place or the final product. Maybe it will be down the road, and maybe that's what Loop, that's a new application coming. Maybe Loop will be the final destination, and maybe Loop will be a thing that is your final destination and you're okay with that. I think it also was compelling when you have a number of different maybe sources of content, types of content, charts and graphs and lists and text, and you maybe are kind of working on all those together. I'm thinking of a larger report that is needed, a marketing department needs to work on and a financial department needs to work on, and a way for the base of that document to get produced, to ultimately produce some final PDF or something down the road. But reducing the barriers to working on that content. Maybe not everybody needs to be forced into a OneNote, everybody forced into the single Excel file. Maybe you can break that up into Loop, into these components. When I was thinking of this, it's kind of containerization of collaboration. There's these little containers that you can reuse and repurpose of this collaboration and move it around. We do know that you, like you said, a document's getting produced. These are initially going to produce a .fluid file in your OneDrive. So that's where I think initially we're going to see these show up. I think that also brings up some IT pro issues of, if I've worked on these fluid documents and now they're embedded in a chat and they're embedded in an email and they're embedded in a Yammer post, and that user account deactivates, you know, what happens? That data is spread out in so many different places with different authentication access, who has access to it, those kind of things.
I seem to recall, and there is actually some documentation around those fluid files and where they live. So we're going to put, we definitely need to remember to put that in the show notes. But they had made a comment that, like, you would handle it because it's tied to OneDrive. You could handle that data living on just like you would in your standard deprovisioning process for when a user leaves. So you touched on something that I think is also kind of mind bending, is that fluid component can live in a Teams chat, but then you could also go edit that same fluid part thing in a email. Like telling a user, hey, go open your email to edit the document. Like, what? That doesn't seem...
We're supposed to get away from email.
Yeah.
So, no, yeah, no doubt.
Well, because of that, I think led to the creation of this new app called Microsoft Loop, which you kind of hinted at a minute ago, which brings all of these things together. And it's kind of like I said, kind of like OneNote on steroids. Now, I'm going to be honest. When I saw the leaked images of it before Ignite came out, I saw it. You had actually posted it in one of our teams. And I thought, that looks a lot like Teams. That was my very first reaction was, is this a Teams replacement? Because we didn't know what it was yet. And I don't like that. I see when I look at it, Teams, channels, and conversations, but really in Loop language, it's workspaces. And then inside of those workspaces, you have pages. And then on those pages, you have components. And it has like these whiteboard-esque type things. Like we've seen some previews of whiteboard now as whiteboard files move over to OneDrive. You get this co-presence awareness of who else is working on the whiteboard, and you actually see where their cursor is on the whiteboard while they're working. And you see that in Loop also. So I think there's probably some the same tech behind it going on there. So this is interesting. I'm going to totally steal something that the Microsoft Cloud Show guys had said. I think CJ had said, this is the first time in like 20 years that Microsoft has come out with something where you're actually creating content and it's not Word, Excel, or PowerPoint. So that's an interesting shift for sure.
Yeah, that should be pretty significant concept that he talked about there. That is, you know, that's their namesake, a Word document, an Excel file, and breaking those apart. It's certainly not the first time that they've enabled us to mix Office documents together. We've been able to take an Excel chart and put it into a Word document for a number of years now, with object linking and embedding, OLE, where you could update, you know, someone else could be responsible for the Excel file on the Excel chart and the data and update that. And that gets put into a report that someone else is producing. And, you know, that's been available for quite a while. This is certainly next level capabilities for that. I think on the interweb, some people have, you know, is this supposed to be something that competes with a product called Notion that has become very popular? So Notion.
There's a lot of not so great things being said around that. They were like, this looks exactly like Notion. I haven't used it.
So. I'm not a Notion user either. I do use, basically a competitor to OneNote. I use a lot Evernote. So it could be somewhere in that kind of space. Evernote has the ability to kind of put different types of content on a page also. So yeah, we'll see where that goes. One thing I want to pick up on that you said is this looks like a lot like Teams. Is Teams certainly is one of the, well, we know it's like the most number of people that have been on a Microsoft project ever. You know, we've heard Teams is so important. Why was this not just brought in as an app into Teams, or, you know, a tab into Teams? It probably is going to end up in there, or a capability. It has to. I mean, Teams is the destination we send people to. So I don't know. It feels like bringing us an extra app has some, like you were saying, just is some confusion to our users potentially down the road. So we'll have to see how that gets integrated. Maybe Loop will get pulled apart and become just integrated into Teams. We keep seeing that with other, like Yammer is getting integrated into Teams, but also pulled apart. It's now part of it's managing the Q&A app in Teams. Well, so pieces that are getting integrated. And Microsoft's been doing that. I mean, that's what Teams is. It integrates all these other pieces. So
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, is when we first found teams or saw teams, we realized, oh, this is great. This is going to be the one hub that's going to expose our users to all of the other things that are available to them in Office 365 that they didn't know about. And so I think even if Loop is its own standalone thing, it's going to be pieces and parts of it are going to be exposed in Teams, like how we saw the ability to do it in chat is, you know, in preview now. So I think that's the idea. I don't know that Microsoft's making Teams to be the one app to rule them all more than it's making it the one app to expose to all of the other things that Office does. So I think, I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious in the future if you and I are, they call it ideating. I can't say that word right, but I'm too redneck for that. But it's a fancy word for coming up with stuff. And and are we going to be doing it in Loop instead of OneNote? You know, I can see that being an easy jump for us, you know, because OneNote supports some level of sync, but it's not live. Like, I can see you make changes, but I can only see it after you made the change in my client updates. Whereas in Loop, I would actually more in tune with what you're doing, even than what I would be seeing inside of a document.
Right.
You know, so that's interesting.
Yeah. And they've got to be bringing something that's better. I would hope that the concept, if this is going to be something that we take advantage of, there's something better about it, something that makes it easier for our users to work with. I would say mixed content, mixed data is what I kind of, my first impressions of Loop has the ability to help you with.
All right, you ready for our last one? We had four, and so this one is
I'll toss this one over to you.
Oh no, so, you're turning the tables on us.
Yeah, well, we should have done that in the last one. So, but you gave us your impression. So,
okay.
This one is I think we thought it would be helpful to us. We'll see how that goes. But this one is a Teams integration, new way that you can work outside of potentially just the people you bring into a team. But it's called shared channels. So what's your thoughts on shared channels and how it integrates into Teams?
My initial reaction was yes. And then about two-thirds of the way through the session, I went, oh, that was, yeah. So this is
right there with you on the initial yes. It was
how many times have we heard our users say, hey, I want to add so-and-so to this channel? And we have to tell them, well, it's not how this works. You have to add them to the team. Yeah, but if I do that, then they can see everything else. Well, yes, that's because you are considering them a teammate and you're adding them to a team. That, despite, I think, Microsoft's efforts to hope and wish that that's how people would work, that's not how people are working. They've been so ingrained with the ability to have folders on a network share and lock certain ones down in certain ways, but it's all on the the T drive or whatever they call it. So shared channels is this, I would have described it as like the silver bullet of what we kind of hoped private channels was going to be, where you can add a particular person to a channel in a team without adding them to the entire team. And that right there would get, I know, our people excited, like so many use cases internally for that. And that's a really good thing I think I want to stick on for a second, is I can see this being good internally, if that's how it even works, because I don't know yet 100%. I don't think it wouldn't. But Microsoft was advertising it as a great way to work with people externally.
And we do that often.
Yes. Yeah, an EDU for sure. Especially in ag, you know, our agents are part of so many national committees and consortiums and other schools and, you know, regional things and all kinds of stuff. We've got tons and tons and tons of guests in our tenant. And And that's a process that has sucked from day one, is switching tenants and just the concept of doing it. And so when Microsoft showed off the shared channel thing, it was, I could add a user to a shared channel and they're from LSU, and they can, there's like this acceptance type process where they have to accept this invite to the shared channel, and then they can decide in their list of teams where do they want this shared channel to show up, and then they can add people into it. Super duper cool idea, until I found out it requires very manual configuration of trust between the two organizations that, you know, you want to share with, and you even have to enable that access in your tenant for a particular subset of users to be allowed to do it.
That's the UGG part.
Yeah.
Great, yeah. Big one. So yeah, getting through that technical side, I can see, wow, that's great. You know, I'm some firm, and we bring in an outside marketing team, our marketing company, and a social media company, and that's, you know, we work with like five other major companies. That's great. That's easy to manage and do that. But where we struggle with our online conferences was, you know, onboarding 1,300, you know, guests into our tenant. And this certainly sounds much easier for them to gain access into our tenant. But that's 50, you know, basically trust to set up, and getting you know, global admins involved and things like that. It would take time, or it just may not happen. So
yeah,
I think your thoughts of wondering about this internally, it's certainly, if it works internally, it could help with some sprawl, perhaps some team sprawl. It might reduce, you know, a few teams, so that's helpful. So hopefully it works just internally. But maybe down the road, if this does look to be really, really helpful, you know, we're higher education, we have access to some communities. There's one called EduCause that's a bunch of IT leaders and pros. You know, maybe there is, and they have some initiatives that are higher ed wide that they help with. Maybe there would be down the road some way to create some collaboration around, you join EduCause, or you're in EduCause, you do this in your tenant, and you connect to all these other universities together. That's the only way I could see it really potentially taking off for us.
Yeah. Well, this was definitely the most technical of our four takeaways. So sorry for getting into the weeds there with that. But the bottom line is, it sounds really impressive. It sounds like it could solve a lot of problems. But don't get too excited, because if your intention is to do this with peers from outside of your organization, there's a lot of work that's going to have to get done. I can see lots of not security concerns, but lots of things that have to be taken into account, you know, with where your stuff's going and who your people are working with. So,
yeah.
Well, this was fun. I think these were the, you know, there was a lot of information that came out of Ignite. So totally. There's way more than what we talked about. Yeah, definitely drinking from the fire hose. But these were the four things that we thought were the most impactful for our user base. Specifically around the modern workplace. So hopefully if you stuck with us this long, you got our summarization of Ignite. We will put some links in the show notes to the actual sessions, and you know, you can go back and watch it. It was free. If you really want to see some of these things, that there's lots of good blogs out there and summarizations, probably way better than ours. So we'll put those in there. But yeah, this was fun. It was a lot of information. So it's time to talk about some wins, Joe. And we already know what our win was, because we just survived it.
You do say survival. It sounds like it was something bad. But no, it's just a lot of work and a lot of buildup getting to that point and putting it on. But yeah, this was Teams Day online number 4 was the last 2 days that we've helped with. Help Russ and work through that process a couple times now. And it's been great connecting with the community and supporting the community. Whether it's like 80 sessions over 2 days, we've helped with kind of managing the sessions, helping coordinate with the moderators and running some of the sessions. It's really great to now the second time doing the full of the full conference is getting to kind of connect with some of the people in the community a little more.
Yeah, definitely was a great event and different from what we normally do, because a lot of our events are for organizations tied to our university somehow. And so this was a community event, which I think is the key thing there. That was a free community event, lots of Microsoft MVPs, just sharing information and teaching, which, you know, there's a lot of virtual events out there, but this being the fourth one, I think it's got a good track record and pulling in some good speakers and some good content. And so, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. We appreciate Russ letting us help and be a part of that. So it was a good win. I mean, we, like I said, we survived. All, as far as I know, all the sessions went the way they were supposed to go. The keynotes went the way that they were supposed to go, and we didn't have anything, you know, the cloud was up and running the whole time. So it was good.
Yeah, it's, you know, these are volunteer events, you know, and from the moderators to the presenters, they're investing their time to help out the community. I know, you know, some of the presenters were, it was like 1 a.m. in Australia, and they were, you know, given the information that they know out to everybody. We'll put a link to the show notes on, you know, kind of how to access that if you want. But looking forward to the next one.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that was a good win. And again, thanks everybody for hanging out with us and, you know, listening to us blab about Ignite.
This podcast also has a new,
oh, you're sneaking in another indicator. Win.
One little win. We got a second for this.
Yeah. We hit 2,000 downloads, according to our podcast host Libsyn. So, that is pretty cool.
Thank you. Definitely. Thank you, listeners. Really appreciate knowing that you're out there. Thank you so much.
It blows my mind that there's that many downloads of somebody listening to us banter back and forth. But yes, we appreciate it very much. And hopefully that means that people are finding it useful. So, all right, that was it. Thanks for hanging out with me for a while, and we will see you next time. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Shift Show. If you found our content useful, please consider subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review. This will help others find our show. If you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on LinkedIn or on our homepage at aka.my/shiftshow. We'll beam back next month for a new episode.
Transporter room, stand by to beam up landing party.